I have loved Westerns since I was 10 years old. And although I personally don't like confrontation, my favorite Westerns, my favorite Western lines and scenes often occur in the midst of confrontation between right and wrong, justice and injustice, good and evil. Of course, in a movie screenplay, we have the luxury, as the story unfolds, of seeing the protagonist that is squarely in the right versus the villain that is obviously in the wrong. How convenient it would be if real life produced such high definition of character. And even when it seems blatantly obvious what is going on, half of us don't or can't see it that way. One of my favorite big screen cowboys is actor Glenn Ford. In the movie The Violent Men, Rancher Ford is pushed into a fight by a cattle baron, riding roughshod over anyone who gets in his way. There's a quote in the movie from Ford's character I have always liked that precedes the war that is about to explode on screen. It's a quote I have taken to heart these past few months in light of all the escalating tension across our nation and around our world. In a way I've never considered before, this quote sums up my resistance.
Now don't force me to fight, because you won't like my way of fighting.
Don't force me to fight, because you won't like my way of fighting. I can promise you that, because very few people do. This is Redemption's Table Podcast, and I'm Robert Barge, your host.
Put my hands in the dirt, gonna lay a seat.
Well, there you are. Or as you might be thinking, we've been here. Where have you been? It has been almost 5 months since our last table episode released, and that has not been intentional. At the first of this year, I allowed a part-time position to become full-time, and that change has made it extremely difficult to write, produce, and record a brand new podcast episode every week. You see, I serve as a fatherhood coordinator at a local pregnancy center in central Alabama. Whenever young fathers accompany their partners for a pregnancy test or an ultrasound, I serve alongside a team of trained volunteer dadvocates who listen to these young men, share their stories, and in turn, we offer fatherhood resources to help these guys grow into who they want to be, great fathers. We also talk to them about where God fits into their lives. It's incredibly rewarding, and I'm still struggling to find a healthy balance. So hopefully I can regain a little more momentum with the podcast going in to the last third of the year. I first heard our opening song today back in late April at a home in Birmingham, Alabama, where I had the privilege to be with singer-songwriter J.J. Heller, who sings gardening, her husband Dave, and Andy Gullihorn for a one-day writer's retreat. And I immediately fell in love with the lyrics of this song, Gardening. I'm grateful to JJ and Dave, who have graciously made it possible for me to share this song with you today. And now, on to today's episode. I've been engaged in a lot of conversations through the years that took place in church between the benediction and the parking lot. And it's my 50-plus year observation that church people seem to love to talk about Jesus's anger. It usually begins with this statement, "Well, even Jesus got angry." And yes, he did. Not once, but twice, the four Gospels record Jesus going into the outer courts of the temple where the money changers and the sacrifice herders had taken over to assist worshipers with their offerings, totally clogging the court of the Gentiles. Jesus saw all this commerce going on that was hindering worship. He made himself a whip to drive them out of the temple, and then he proceeded to flip their tables and Indiana Jones them right out the door. People in church seem to love this version of Jesus. I've heard it so many times. Well, even Jesus got angry. Interestingly enough, I've never heard anybody say, "Well, even Jesus washed feet." "Well, even Jesus turned the other cheek." No, it's always, "Well, even Jesus got angry," to which I now reply every time I hear it, "Yes, he did. And I trust Jesus's anger, but I do not trust your anger. And I do not trust mine." I think we might like the anger of Jesus a little too much to help us justify some of our own. We were born on a battlefield, folks. It's true, and the intensity of that battlefield is ramping up at a disturbing pace, it seems, from the church house to the White House, from the left side of the aisle to the right side of the aisle. That's about as political a statement as you've ever heard me utter in 173 episodes. The divide in our land appears to be spreading. Now, 1 Corinthians 14:33 states, "God is not the author of confusion, but of peace." So if God is not authoring all this confusion, who is? Well, in John 8:44, Jesus identifies Satan as a liar and the father of lies. Then in 2 Corinthians 11:14, the Apostle Paul describes him as one who masquerades as an angel of light. Now, I get it. I have been daily rolling my eyes the past 214 days. You can stop right there. I've been rolling my eyes on a regular basis decades before that. And all this mix of battlefield and political sides and confusion and masquerade, it would behoove all of us to remember Ephesians 6:12, we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but with spiritual forces. We don't have people problems. We have an enemy who loves to turn us against ourselves. There is a key component that God graciously offers us that we've either forgotten how to use or we purposefully avoid it altogether. Going back to the first chapter of the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah 1 verse 18, God says, hey, come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. And then he goes on to add, though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red as crimson, they shall be like wool. If you are willing and obedient, you will eat the best from the land, but if you resist and rebel, you will be devoured by the sword. Come now, let us reason together. That one word, reason, that's what's missing. Not let us yell across the aisle at one another. Not let us blast the person who is not like us politically, spiritually, sexually, morally on our social media walls. No, let us reason together. Let us respect one another in our conversations. Let us speak the truth with gentleness and respect. Let us listen with kindness. Well, you may be saying, Robert, what about the rest of that verse that promises blessing or judgment? Well, I go back to what I said about Jesus flipping tables. I trust Jesus' anger, but I don't trust yours, and I don't trust mine. And therefore, I trust God's judgment, but I don't trust yours, and I definitely don't trust mine. I recently saw this quote from David Brooks, a recent guest on the Russell Moore Show podcast. Politics give you the illusion that you're part of a righteous cause, but you're not in community. You're not sitting with a widow or serving the poor. You're just tweeting something nasty about your opponents. It gives you the illusion that it's going to fill the hole in your soul, but it just drags you deeper into culture war. And then the Instagram post here, the after party, states, that hits a little too close to home, doesn't it? And it should, because David Brooks isn't describing them, he's describing us. I have jokingly quipped to a few friends lately what I thought might be the title of my autobiography if I ever write one. I think I'll call it All the Tables I Did Not Flip. All the Tables I Did Not Flip, because there have been a lot of tables that I've wanted to flip. I told one friend that, and she immediately replied, well, that would be a much better list, all the tables you did not flip versus all the tables you did, and she'd be right. There's much to be angry about right now, I get it. There's a spiritual battle that is greater than any so-called culture war. The kingdom of heaven, established by Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago, is advancing right now upon the earth, and the forces of darkness are resisting. Don't get suckered into using the same tactics as the enemy. Fight the battle as Jesus taught us to fight it. Come now, let us reason together. Reason indicates having conversations rather than shouting matches. Reason indicates listening to the one who holds an opposite point of view than you. I have been teaching the Beatitudes off and on whenever I've been granted the opportunity for over 20 years. And in the seventh Beatitude, Jesus taught us how to fight. Matthew 5, verse 9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Oh, the bliss of the peacemaker, not the peace lover, not the peacekeeper, the peacemaker. Oh, the bliss of the ones who are willing to take action to bring peace. You see, a peacemaker does not take sides. What God calls us to in the middle is more important than taking a side. A peacemaker looks at both sides of a conflict. A peacemaker does not take a human side. They take a stand, but not a side. They step into the middle, into the chasm, into the conflict. Oh, the bliss of the ones who see the rift between God and man, who are willing to do something about that rift, who are willing to speak out in God's behalf in order to persuade a lost sinner of the error of their way and the truth of God's love. That's our calling. Oh, the bliss of the peacemaker, Jesus goes on to say, for they will be called the sons of God. Now, sons of God is synonymous with children of God. It's another way of saying who we are in Jesus Christ. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you can call yourself a believer, a disciple, a follower, a God-truster, a child of God, a son of God. But if we stop there in our interpretation, we're going to miss a much deeper truth. You see, there was a common Jewish expression used to describe someone with phrases like the sons of. For example, James and John, the two disciples, were known as the sons of thunder. In other words, they were like thunder. They possessed a volatile disposition. In the book of Acts, Barnabas was known as the son of consolation, the son of encouragement. In other words, Barnabas embodied encouragement. Therefore, when Jesus said that peacemakers would be known as the sons of God, here's what he meant. He meant whenever we are making peace between God and man, or between one human being and another, at that point, we are most like God. We are most like Jesus, the Son of God, and therefore we take on his name and his nature. The one who Isaiah described as the Prince of Peace. The one who the Apostle Paul said is our peace. The one who stepped out onto a nail, met the sin of the world head on upon a cross, and in the end made peace between us and God. Jesus died being a peacemaker. Remember at the start of the episode, I shared that quote from the Glenn Ford Western, The Violent Men. Don't force me to fight because you won't like my way of fighting. And I said, I can promise you not very many people will. You see, the way that we fight as followers of Jesus is being peacemakers. Jesus died being a peacemaker. To live redemptively is to live uncommonly. Because the world has no category for what Jesus is advocating here. Little wonder that blessed are the peacemakers is followed by blessed are the persecuted. Our resistance begins by spreading tables and inviting the opposite side to join us for a meal rather than flipping them. Our resistance begins by sowing seeds in the lives of others. Our resistance begins by daring to fight the good fight in such a way that no one on either side will understand or appreciate it first. But if you listen, when you do that, when you live sacrificially, when you live uncommonly, if you listen, you'll hear the applause of nail-scarred hands. Oh, the bliss of standing on the crossbeam, extending peace to all sides. For it is there that we most resemble the kind of children God would have. Until next time, thanks for listening.
I'm gonna walk outside. I'm gonna walk outside, put my head